You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern and 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us all of your texts, your voicemails, anything you got for us. Tomorrow is our mailbag, so we'll be diving into all of those. You guys have done a great job this weekend. Continue to drop those for us. 331-979-1369 is the place to do that. Matt, welcome back. We got the Lakers tonight. Bulls and Lakers, the LeBron-less Lakers tonight, but nonetheless, the Lakers trying to wrap up this West Coast road trip. This is game 4 of 5 of this West Coast road trip. Bulls come home and play the Heat on Saturday, but they'll finish up with the Nuggets on Thursday. But how you doing?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation?
Yeah, I thought it was funny that when they asked Jim Boylan at Shootaround the other day about the LeBron-less Lakers, as you just mentioned, he just like played dumb. It was like, I didn't even know that LeBron wasn't playing. I figured he'd be playing. He loves playing.
Yeah, there's
the
no
Bulls.
Way he didn't know
like,
LeBron.
Dude,
was
come on. Like, what are you trying to pull? Are you honestly telling me? So it's one of two things. Boylan's trying to play down the significance of LeBron being in or LeBron being out of a lineup, which is childish and stupid, or he is a head coach who, preparing for his next opponent schematically, actually didn't know that arguably the best player in the game right now and one of the greatest players of all time would not be in the lineup, which might have, you know, just a slight impact on how Boylan goes about preparing for that opponent. Like, you got to be kidding me. Either way, it was terrible look for Boylan.
I can't sit here and reasonably think that Jim Boylan would honestly believe to himself that he didn't know LeBron James would be out. To not pay attention, like, I get you're the head coach of the Chicago Bulls and you're only worried about the Chicago Bulls, but at the same time, like, dude, it's LeBron James. Like, you're going up against the Lakers as one of your opponents on the 5-game road trip. You have to at least monitor the greatest player of all time, one of the greatest players of all time, one of the players that you're going to be matching up with tonight. Like, to me, that was just wild. Like, I think that was just Jim Boylan being Jim Boylan, and another classic case of, like, a lot of Bulls fans on Twitter like to say, like, hashtag Jim Boylan says stuff. So I think that's what it was. Yeah, I think that's
Jim
what
Boylan
it was.
Says stuff. Yeah, he was trying to keep the focus on his team. And like, oh, you know, well, it doesn't matter if LeBron's playing or LeBron's not playing. You know, we're just trying to focus and get ready to prepare ourselves the best we can. It's like, dude, what really? Because I think what you're trying to get your team prepared for in its next game of this road trip involves knowing LeBron is not playing. It's just like, you got to be kidding me.
So let's before we talk about Robin Lopez and what the value is for him on the trade market, that's what we're going to do on today's show. Talk about a little bit about Jabari Parker, because that seems like that's the hot topic of the last 24 hours for whatever reason. I can't even believe Robin Lopez, of all people, is a hot button issue in Bulls Twitter, but apparently it is. As much as it is, it is. So we'll have a discussion about him. But let's talk a little bit about this Lakers team really quick. So coming in, this Lakers team has struggled a little bit. We mentioned it at the back end of yesterday's show that they had lost to a Cleveland Cavaliers team who is just god-awful. You think this Bulls team is bad?
Only team in the league with fewer wins than the Bulls.
Yes. And Matt, the Cleveland Cavaliers are on pace to have the worst defensive rating as a team for an entire season by 3 points since the NBA started tracking this back in the early 90s. By a clear 3 points. That is wild. That's wild. So to lose to a team like that, that's showcasing our Bulls fans' favorite point guard in Cameron Payne and a plethora of other really terrible players, to see that happen, especially on their home floor, was something to say. But tonight's going to be an important game for the Lakers, because this could be a tipping point for Luke Walton and the Lakers, especially Luke Walton's job, who seems, I mean, that coaching seat seems red hot for him.
Yeah, which, you know, LA is obviously right there with the Knicks as the biggest market team in the league. And getting LeBron and making all of the other offseason moves that they did to try and escalate this and accelerate their rebuild, put a lot of expectations on Luke Walton's shoulders. And I mean, this is the same dude that held down Steve Kerr's job before he left the Warriors, while Steve Kerr missed a good chunk of whatever that was a couple seasons ago on their way to that. I think it was their 73-9 season, right? When, you know, Luke Walton didn't technically get credit for any of those wins, but he certainly got a lot of other kinds of credit for being a pretty darn good coach to get that Warriors team to play at such a high level. And now, I mean, just hot seat because it's the Lakers and because you have LeBron, and everybody expected them to all of a sudden be a top tier seed in the Western Conference, as stacked as it is, just because team that has LeBron usually is playoff bound as a high seed and making a deep playoff run. That's always been the case when LeBron was in the East. Now things are harder. And I think the funniest thing is all these Lakers fans who have said throughout the first parts of this season, for one reason or another, like, trade LeBron. We don't need him. He doesn't fit. This isn't working. Look at what this team is struggling to do without LeBron over the last 10 or so games. I mean, it's laughable that they are putting pressure on Luke Walton when, hey, guess what? Any other coach in the league would struggle without LeBron when you are used to playing with LeBron. That's kind of a no-brainer.
So the Los Angeles Lakers, Matt, over the last 9 games without LeBron James, have had the second best defensive rating in all of basketball. Pretty good. 103.2. You would sit there and say, wow, without LeBron, pretty good. Defensive rating 103.2 behind the Utah Jazz. Isn't it pretty classic, of course, that the Bulls go on this West Coast road trip and over the last 9-10 games that they've got to face all of the teams that are just playing outstanding defense, like classic. And of course the Bulls have been struggling on offense, just crawling to try and score buckets. And of course we got to go against all of these teams that are just playing great defense so far. So 103.2 puts the Lakers at the second best defensive rating in all of basketball over the last 9 games without LeBron James. But here's what has been killing the Lakers. The Lakers have posted a 99.4 offensive rating, and that puts them at the worst offensive rating in all of basketball over the last 9
games.
That's
like Jim Boylan levels of bad.
That is Jim Boylan levels of bad. So that net rating puts them at a negative 3.8 overall. So that sits them at 21st in the league. So it's pretty bad on one side of the basketball. So this could be a bizarre game tonight for the Bulls and the Lakers. I don't really know what to expect. If the Lakers are playing really good defense but not knocking down shots, I don't know what to expect from this Bulls team.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now, given the performances we've seen from him over the last handful of games in LeBron's absence, the person the Bulls need to be concerned about first and foremost, is Kyle Kuzma. You know, everybody talks about, you know, what kind of progression will we see from Lonzo in his second season, and Brandon Ingram, what kind of star potential does he have? And for all of the talk about those two and the other additions that the Lakers made, you know, whether it's Rondo, who's also out with an injury right now, or you know, JaVale McGee or Lance Stephenson or all these crazy characters, like, Kuzma is the one who's balling. He dropped 41 in their win against the Pistons last week, one of the wins that you mentioned. And even as embarrassing as it is to lose to Cleveland, which they did on Sunday, Kuzma was leading the way again. He dropped 29 points in that one. So I like that. That's the player that I'm excited to watch tonight in a Lakers uniform, and that's the player that I think Boylan will try to limit. You know, saying, all right, well, hopefully Boylan has learned at this point that LeBron's not playing. So who, knowing that, is your primary focus of containing on the Lakers' offensive end? And to me, the clear answer right now is Kyle Kuzma.
Completely agree with you. I think the other night he dropped 41. I don't remember who it was against.
Yeah, 41 against Detroit.
41 against Detroit in their win against Detroit. And they needed every single one of those buckets. But thinking about that and just looking at some of the stats over the last 10 games for the Lakers, you know, the Lakers are shooting terrible from the three-point line, which is actually good for the Bulls because it gives the Bulls a break from getting killed from the perimeter. Like, we talked about it against the Jazz, you know, going underneath every single screen and just getting killed there. This might be a case where the Bulls and Jim Boylan are saying, hey, you know what? If we can kill the Lakers in the paint tonight and win paint points, and the Lakers want to shoot a billion threes tonight, we might actually have a chance to win tonight. And this might be another case because the Lakers are shooting 29.2% from three over the last 10 games on 29 attempts. So this might be a case where if the Lakers come out tonight and just start chucking up threes from the perimeter and Kyle Kuzma doesn't have it around the rim tonight, this might be a back-and-forth game. But look, we can't discredit what the Lakers are doing on the defensive side either, so the Bulls have to get buckets tonight. And whether that comes from Levine or Dunn or Markkanen, I don't care who it comes from, but they got to get buckets. You can't go 2-3-4-minute stretches where guys are chucking up shots and missing, and you're running down to the defensive side, and all of a sudden you're letting the Lakers go on 8, 10, 12, 2 runs. Like, that can't happen, and I think that's something that I've noticed over the last 2-3-4 weeks that the Bulls have played is these little stretches that the Bulls find themselves digging in these small holes of letting teams go on these small stretches of 10-0 runs, 12-2 runs, 14-4 runs, and digging themselves in holes, and then they have to climb out of it. And they have to climb out of it without their starters. And asking a bench that's filled with guys like Antonio Blakeney and Ryan Arcidiacono and Shaq Harrison, and no disrespect to any of those guys, but those guys aren't going to dig you out of holes when you're down 10, when you're down 12, when you're down 14. So find ways to get your starters involved and get those guys scoring early and often, and that includes Lowry freaking Markkanen, and get the guy going and get him going early.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Obviously, it's been frustrating to see Markkanen kind of just going through the struggles of finding the right times to be aggressive on the offensive end, and we've only seen one or maybe two games since Markkanen came back and Levine has been healthy where those guys both have a big game and the Bulls offense looks like it's actually moving. And it was I'm pretty sure it was the close loss to the Pacers, right, where they each dropped around 30 points, and that was the same game where Chris Dunn had probably his best game of the season, a career high 17 assists. Like, we can see that kind of effort, and as you said, like, the Lakers are no flops defensively. Like, it's going to be a challenge. You just need to see that balance on the offensive end, and some of it is, you know, rolling your eyes and wondering what is Jim Boylan going to do? What kind of plays is Jim Boylan going to call up? Because sometimes it seems like when Levine goes rogue or Markkanen just puts his head down and looks to get his shot or looks to drive, that's kind of when the Bulls are most successful offensively. Dan, you mentioned the lack of depth they have as far as scoring options on their bench right now. But even with all of that, when we started out on this road trip, I saw, knowing that LeBron would be out, that this Lakers game was the best chance the Bulls had to get a win. Warriors, obviously not. Blazers, nobody has great success playing in Portland. Certainly the Bulls have in recent years. The Jazz, you know, a mediocre team, but really, like, without LeBron, I saw this as a winnable game for the Bulls. We talk about, and, you know, this is, can kind of transition into our next topic of conversation, as far as what happened at practice yesterday between Rolo and Chris Dunn. It sounds like that this team is getting very sick of this losing streak, which is now, what, 7 games, 8 games, something like that? If they want to get a single win on this road trip and avoid the ongoing frustration of a losing streak coming up on 10 games, this is their chance to do it. Because I'm sorry, beating the Nuggets in Denver for the fifth and final game of this road trip, not happening.
I agree with you. And I pegged this one too, especially when I knew LeBron was going to be out. I said, okay, I think the Lakers, the young Lakers team, if the Bulls are fully healthy, I think this is a legitimate shot to pick or steal one away. This is one the Bulls need. Like, if, for all the tanking fans out there, I get it. But I think we all as a fan base can agree that the Bulls need a win. They need a win for their morale. Like, I know Matt, I know you laughed at me last month when I was talking about a morale boost as far as a win goes, and you were saying stack up the L's as many as you can because you don't know what's going to happen when it comes March. But I think at this point, when we're talking about seven losses in a row, when we're talking about things boiling over in practice the way that they are, when frustrations are at an all-time high, when the Bulls are losing 8 of 9 the way that they have, this is a time where you need a W. And like you had said, in the reports that have come out about practice, Chris Dunn said, you know, losing is draining. Being the bottom of the barrel teams in the NBA is draining. So I just wanted to mention this really quick. Looking at clutch time stats, because I figure without LeBron James tonight, this could be a potentially close game. And if we're looking at a fourth quarter where the Bulls and the Lakers are within 5 points in the fourth quarter, I'm curious. I'm like, who on the Lakers is hitting clutch shots and who on the Bulls is hitting clutch shots? And the Bulls haven't been in that many games where they're within 5 points in the fourth quarter and they're looking for clutch shots. And I was curious, who do you think has been taking the most shots in quote-unquote clutch time? It's 5 points either ahead or behind within 5 minutes of the fourth quarter. For the Bulls, who do you think has taken the most shots this season?
I mean, my gut says Zach LaVine.
Yeah, it's been Zach LaVine by a mile. Zach LaVine's taken 55 shots in clutch time, and if you reduce it down from 5 minutes to 2 minutes, he's taken nearly 50% of the shots. So, and that takes into account the injuries too, because a lot of the games that they were playing in close in clutch time came in the first 4 weeks of the season. Think back to like the Charlotte games and the Detroit game where they fumbled the ball, and the overtime game against the Nuggets early on, those types of games. Think about all of those. But even then, Zach LaVine is 24 for 55 in clutch time, 43.6%. Jabari Parker's actually the second most shots in clutch time, 8 for 17 at 47.1%. Lauri Markkanen. So, Matt, I dove into clutch time stats, was looking across the league, and for guys who have shot 25 or more shots this season, did a deep dive. If Lauri Markkanen, if he can get to that 25 shots or more benchmark, and he can stay somewhere around the shot, the percentage that he's at right now, he's going to be in the top 10. He's at 61.5% right now. He's only got 13 attempts, but I mean, if he can boost that up right now, he's going to be in the top 10, top 15 of those types of players. So Bulls need to be in a few more games and he'll be up there.
We've seen that he's not afraid of those moments, and he's not afraid to take the ball and make something happen in those moments when he's given the opportunity and when his teammates give him the ball. There was his game winner against the Thunder. He also hit a couple of really clutch shots in that dramatic OT loss against the Pacers. Like, we have seen Markkanen be able to be that guy. It's just most often, as you just said, the numbers show LaVine is the one who has been the go-to guy. And I think a large part of that is because LaVine was healthy to start the season. And when this team was very depleted in the first month or so, Zach LaVine was basically the only option they had as far as, we need to go get a bucket late in a close game. And Zach LaVine sometimes succeeded, and I feel like more often than not, he failed with turnovers or missed shots or whatever. But because LaVine was option 1A and really the only option, I feel like that's why he has kind of continued to be that guy. And Markkanen coming back and trying to get himself to knock off the rust of missing the first month or so of the season, and he hasn't really been able to take those opportunities to say, hey, I can be a clutch guy for this team late in a close game too. We've only seen it a couple of times, but I think you and I and most Bulls fans out there would love to see Markkanen get more opportunities in those kinds of moments.
Yeah, and just looking at the minutes that Lauri Markkanen has played in quote-unquote clutch time, it's only been 35 minutes. And think again, the qualifications for this is 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, last 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, up 5 points or down 5 points. So not that big of a sample size, especially because of the injury. Zach LaVine has played nearly over double of those minutes so far this season, and the Bulls haven't been in that many games for that to happen. So small sample size there, but you can tell a lot of the focus has been on Zach LaVine. And if you take it down to a minute, it's even more of a focus on Zach LaVine. And I don't know how much that is skewed, and I don't want to get bogged down to that specifically because it doesn't really matter on a tanking team, but the focus has been solely on Zach LaVine in that last minute, last 90 seconds or so. But looking at the Lakers really quick, without LeBron James, who's taken 42 shots in clutch time, which is by far the most on the Lakers at 45.2%, Kyle Kuzma's the next up at 34 shots. He's shooting 44.1%. But besides him, it's Josh Hart, Lonzo Ball, and Brandon Ingram all at 16, 15, and 14 shots. So not a lot of guys are shooting in clutch time. The Lakers don't play. When they do play a lot of time in clutch time in these close game situations, a lot of it's run through LeBron. A lot of shots are taken by LeBron. No-brainers here. But now without LeBron, a lot of these guys aren't stepping up. Josh Hart shooting 31.3% in clutch time. Lonzo Ball is shooting 40% on a small sample size. Brandon Ingram's shooting a terrible 28.6% in clutch time. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is shooting 28.6% in clutch time. The point I'm making here is the only person in clutch time, should the Bulls come down to a situation in the last 5 minutes tonight, the only person that they're going to rely on tonight for scoring is going to be Kyle Kuzma. So shut Kyle Kuzma down if you're in a close game tonight. Shut Kyle Kuzma down. The Bulls have a really good shot to win tonight. That's all I'm going to say. So the stats back that up, too.
Yeah, they do. We'll see if the Bulls can put together a full 48-minute game, something that Boylan always talks about, something that Fred talked about a lot, too, because we've seen those moments, and in their most recent loss to Utah on Saturday night, it was the fourth quarter. It's varied which quarter dooms them, but if they can put together a solid effort and not have one of those dreaded quarters where the offense just completely falls apart while the other team is still scoring on them, I think it's a winnable game tonight. I mean, I know what you said about this Bulls team desperately needs a win. And, you know, let's now talk about what exactly was going on at practice yesterday with this frustration boiling over. Cleveland did just pick up a win over these very same Lakers. So, you know, those tankathon standings are important. Not going to lie. I think you're right. I think the morale could be helpful for them right now. But if they went 0-5 on this road trip, I mean, I wouldn't be the most unhappy about it.
That's true. Maybe it can be a scenario where they're where it's like the Indiana game a few weeks ago, where you play down to the final buzzer, play a really damn good game, and then you lose on the final shot or something like that. But even if they do come away with a win, I wouldn't be mad about it because it would be a morale boost. It's something that they do need. Speaking of the tankathon,
yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think the team and those players desperately do need to break this losing streak for their own mental health.
Because when you go into Denver on Thursday nights, it's not going to be pretty. Denver has been really good.
You're playing at altitude against one of the best teams in the league, yeah. That's not going
to
be pretty.
Tankathon standings really quick before we get to Rolo and stuff. Cleveland's at 9-35. They sit at the top of the tankathon standings. They are number one right now. The Bulls sit a game and a half behind them. They're at number two. The Bulls have lost 7 in a row. Cleveland, just like you had mentioned, has won 1 in a row. They're 1-9 in their last 10. The Bulls are 2-8 in their last 10. New York has lost 4 in a row. They're 3rd right now. They're tied actually with the Bulls at 10-33. They're 1-9 in their last 10. Phoenix is number 4. They're 11-33. They are 3-7 in their last 10. And then to round out the top 5, it's Atlanta at 13-30. They lost their last one, and they are 4-6 in the last 10. Atlanta's played pretty decent, actually, in their last, like, 10 games. I don't know if you've got to check them out at all, but Kevin Huerter and John Collins and Trae Young, they've got some, like, that dynamic in Atlanta's been kind of weird, but weirdly good. They've got some young talents going on there. I don't know if you've got a chance to pay attention at all to them, but some interesting things going on in Atlanta. So it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
And it sounds like they might be shopping Jeremy Lin, too.
Could get some pieces for him, too. So, I mean, he was in the top 10 of All-Star voting, which is just wild to me. But nonetheless, speaking of Cleveland, fast on Cleveland. So the Patrick McCaw investigation just ended yesterday. And that investigation was about the Cleveland Cavaliers signing him to a contract because there was a side story about Patrick McCaw with the Golden State Warriors this offseason about how he was a restricted free agent and he wasn't going to sign a contract and he was holding out going into the season and wasn't going to sign a deal with them. He wanted more money. And then Cleveland offered him a deal that was 2 years, $6 million. And so the Golden State Warriors decided not to match him, so then he went to Cleveland, played in 3 games. There was that deadline that they needed to match in order to either waive him to clear him of his contract or they had to fully guarantee his contract for the rest of the year. So Cleveland decided to waive him. He was completely off of all the contract and all of the restrictions that would have made him a restricted free agent again for the Warriors. And so he was able to go and sign with the Raptors. Well, there was this thing that was filed by the Golden State Warriors, said that there was some there was bad business done by the Cleveland Cavaliers for Patrick McCaw, basically saying that the Cavs did this because basically saying that the Cavs had this plan of bringing McCaw in and releasing him to let him go to another team because they wanted to do this out of spite to the Warriors. And if they found any bad doing bad business, that the Cavs would have lost their first-round pick. Now, that's extreme. And so the NBA did an investigation, found out that there was no bad doing, and so the Cavs didn't lose their first-round pick. So just wanted to update people on that. It was far-fetched from the beginning that the Cavs would end up losing their first-round pick. It didn't end up happening, but that was certainly a weird and interesting story. So that got all cleared up yesterday.
It was definitely weird, the ongoing McCaw saga. And as Bulls fans, you know, Schadenfreude would have been nice if there was some kind of punishment that the league felt was necessary to take a pick away from Cleveland. Because honestly, I don't think I'm alone in having this horrible fear in the back of my mind that the Bulls might end up with one of the 3 worst records in the league this season and have those even 14% odds of landing the number 1 overall pick with Cleveland and another team, whether it's, you know, Phoenix or Atlanta or whoever, and Cleveland wins again. Because I swear to God, they just, like, they get all the number 1 picks, especially in the year following a LeBron James departure. They got the number 1 pick. But I think the league would much rather have the Bulls be relevant than the Cavs. Not to say, like, we can't get into a giant conspiracy theory about whether or not the lottery is rigged right now. I'm just saying that fear is there. And I think it's there for a lot of Bulls fans that we might endure another awful losing season that maybe involves some tanking kind of stuff in the back 35 to 40 games. And if it's all for naught, and guess what? This is essentially a one-player draft, people. You can talk about Reddish or R.J. Barrett or some of the other people, Nasir Little, or some of the other people making noise right now, Romeo Langford, whatever. No, this is a one-player draft. It is Zion, and then it's everybody else. And if Cleveland, for fuck's sake, gets another number one pick and they take Zion and the Bulls rebuild is just left to take whatever leftovers are there with picks 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever, I'm going to be really upset about that.
I'm with you, man. I agree, too. And look, RJ Barrett went 8 for 30 last night. I don't know if you watched that Duke game last night, but
oh, I didn't watch the whole game. I watched some of it, and then I saw his final stat line box score.
Trey Jones was out of the game. He hurt his shoulder. Huge part of Duke's game.
The shoulder injury.
Cam Reddish didn't play. Zion and RJ basically had to do everything for that team. RJ Barrett was chucking up shots left and right, but he went 8 for 30 last night. Another real quick update on just some draft stuff. Kevin Porter Jr. has been suspended indefinitely by USC for conduct detrimental to the team. So that's an interesting storyline we should keep our eyes on, because he's right now mock drafts. He's in the top 10, so he's a name to keep an eye on. Obviously, a lot of people talked about him as being like this pure scorer and all of that. So keep an eye on that story. Keep your eyes on that name too, because nobody's really talking about what happened with that story. So it's no real news, but just keep your eyes and your ears on that story too. But I agree with you. Like, Cleveland doesn't deserve Zion. It's flat simple. They don't deserve it. Dan Gilbert doesn't deserve him. So don't give Cleveland the number one pick. But I digress. Let's get into the Rolo stuff. Let's get into the Jabari Parker trade stuff, because this has been the talk of Bulls Twitter, Bulls conversation over the last 24 hours. And you would think like Rolo was like some type of superstar at this point, the way that we're talking about his trade value or what the Bulls should or should not do with Robin Lopez. So it sounds like Robin Lopez over the last 48, 72 hours is trying to push his way more and more to a buyout than anything else, or at least a trade to the Golden State Warriors. And obviously, first and foremost, there's almost 0% chance that he gets traded to the Golden State Warriors, because they just can't do that without trading a core piece.
They can't match that salary.
Yeah.
Right.
Robin makes like what, $14.8 million this year on an expiring deal, something around that, $14.1 million. The Rockets just lost Clint Capella for 4 to 6 weeks, so injuries are going to happen over the next 2-3 weeks before the trade deadline happens. Matt, what do you think the realistic expectation is for Robin Lopez's trade value on the market? Because clearly, if nobody is interested right now in Robin Lopez, I don't think over the next 2 weeks the value is going to rise at all, especially if now what we're hearing is his role is going to be reduced to pretty much zero on Jim Boylan's rotation. I don't see there's going to be any value for him other than just a complete swap, and I don't even think you're going to get a second round pick for him. And so what are your thoughts on him and his value and where he ends up and what the Bulls ultimately should do for him?
Yeah, so his value is weird because, you know, I'm with you. I don't even know. We were surprised that the Bulls were able to get 2 second-rounders for Holiday. And we talked about how his performance has fallen off a cliff since he went to Memphis. Rolo, there aren't a whole lot of teams looking for that. You mentioned, yeah, Capella goes down. Injuries can always happen. So between now and February 7th for the trade deadline, we could see Rolo's trade value go up or down. Here's the thing to me, though. I think this is the key. We have heard that the Warriors are interested in Rolo because they want to add some front court depth. You know, they're about to get Boogie Cousins back, and we'll see how that works out for them. But they really, I think, have missed the presence of JaVale McGee in their front court when he went off and joined LeBron with the Lakers this season. So knowing that the Warriors want him, and knowing that a Warriors-Bulls trade for Rolo's salary to balance is virtually impossible, everyone across the league knows, okay, if the Bulls don't find a trade partner for Robin Lopez and they agree to a buyout after the deadline, he's going to go sign with the Warriors. So if there's another team out there, whether it's the Rockets or anybody else, who actually really sees the value of adding Rolo as a veteran depth piece to their bench, their front court bench for a playoff push, I think it's easy to assume Rolo has interest from several teams. One of those teams is the Warriors. Gee, where does Rolo want to play? The dude's a great veteran, a well-respected veteran in this league, and the guy wants to compete for a championship. If Rolo has an offer from the Warriors, money aside, he's going to go play for the Warriors. So the only way in my mind that I see the Bulls getting any kind of asset for Rolo, even if it's just a future second rounder or something, is some team out there saying, we're going to lose to the Warriors in a bid for Rolo's services if the buyout happens after the deadline. So let's offer the Bulls something minimal, even a second-round pick, and see if we can find some kind of salary match that's close enough, you know, within the $5 million of Rolo's contract, maybe something that's an expiring deal, so that we can get Rolo's services before he chooses to go to the Warriors. That is the only scenario I see where the Bulls can actually find a trade for Rolo. If some team out there so desperately wants him because of an injury in their front court or whatever, and make the assumption that if Rolo gets his option, Rolo goes to play for the Warriors to be a championship contending favorite. To me, like, that's the only way it happens.
I get the market for trading Robin Lopez in. I get the idea behind it is the Bulls are not budging on the fact of buying out Robin Lopez right this second. I understand that. Before the trade deadline makes no sense. Like, if you can get for Robin Lopez, if you can get something for Robin Lopez, why just buy him out? I get the good faith thing. Totally get that. Understand it. February 7th comes and you can't get anything for him. Sure, buy him out. Great. Robin Lopez, you've been fantastic here. Totally understand. Thanks for doing that. Go play for the Warriors and go win yourself a ring. You've been great. 100%. Totally agree. But if the Bulls can find something for him, you have to do that. And look, if Robin Lopez really wants to secure a spot to go play with the Warriors, you know, he doesn't have to just agree to the minimum salary that the Warriors are going to pay him in the buyout that the Bulls have to pay for the rest of his salary. You understand what I'm saying? Like, he can take less money from the Bulls, like agree to give the Bulls back some of his salary for this year in order to agree to the buyouts. Like, he could do that. If he really wants to get off of this team and go play for the Warriors, he can give back part of his contract. Like, he could do that. So there is some give and take on both sides. So I think it just comes down to the fact that the Bulls are gauging every single option and they should be doing that as a rebuilding team. I get the good faith thing too. So the thing that should be, there should be a freak out if February 7th comes and passes and there is no buyout and Robin Lopez is still sitting on this team. I get he is a value to the veteran leadership thing. I think people laugh at that about all the veterans on the Bulls and the guys that have come and passed, but Robin has really been the sticking point of any veteran that you can talk about. He's been the one glue guy that I think has stayed throughout all of this.
He's the one who prevented the team mutiny.
Agreed. And,
you know, among many other examples of his leadership, he did that. So I feel like we're on the same page here. Essentially, Bulls fans who are saying right now the Bulls need to buy out Rolo and do the guy a solid and let him go play on a contender. It's not fair to keep him sitting here. Okay, that statement is true if and when, as you said, they can't find a deal to get some kind of asset for Rolo at the trade deadline, because guess what? That still gives him, you know, I think close to a month's worth of time to come to terms on a buyout and go find another team that he can play for and play for in the playoffs. If the Bulls can't find a deal for Rolo to get an asset for him, then yes, the Bulls fan stance on Twitter right now of free Rolo, let him go, do the guy a solid, is accurate. But there's no point in buying him out right now while there is still potential for a Rolo trade. But the other factor here, Jordan, and I'll get your thoughts on this in a second, is it sounds like Rolo's minutes, according to a report yesterday, are about to take a hit again, because maybe Jabari is going to get some more looks. And they also want to take a look at Bobby Portis and his ability to play the five, because we saw some of that last season. It wasn't great, but if the Bulls are going to invest in some real money with Bobby this offseason to keep him around, it would be nice to know that Bobby can play both of your front court positions and play so, you know, competently. So because of that, and because of maybe Jabari getting a second look as the Bulls are making the last-ditch effort to raise Jabari's trade value, Rolo's going to sit. So these things are all interconnected. We need to take a look at front court lineups that include Bobby, Markkanen, Wendell, Jabari, all these pieces to see what we can do. And in the meantime, maybe we raise Jabari's trade value. Because as egregious as Jabari's $20 million is, and even harder to match than Rolo's $14 and change, I think Jabari is a more interesting piece and hypothetically would be a more interesting trade piece to a lot of teams out there, more so than Robin Lopez. So if the Bulls believe that Jabari has a non-zero trade value, it makes sense that they might give him some more run in Boylan's rotation over the next few weeks leading up to the deadline, because they might see that there's a greater opportunity to net an asset and a better asset for Jabari Parker than there is for Robin Lopez.
You hit it right on the head about the Bobby Portis situation too, is reducing his role. I think that's exactly what I said yesterday, is that's something else people are forgetting here, is if they're going to try Bobby again at the five, that's something we seriously need to see over the next 39 games. If the Bulls are going to commit long-term money to him, 4 years at whatever it is going to be, $40-plus million this season, he seriously needs to be able to switch between the four and the five and play competent minutes at both of those positions. Because if he can't do that, I'm sorry, you can't afford to pay him $40-plus million and commit that much money to that guy and only play one position. It just can't happen. So we need to see that he can competently play the center position too. And like you had mentioned last year, they tried him in stretches at the center position. It wasn't really working. The offense kind of dipped. His production level, his defense wasn't that great at the center position. They tried him in stretches when he was younger too there, and it didn't really work. But we really need to see if that can work and work in long stretches of time too. So we need to find out if that can happen, because that is a realistic scenario. So I agree with you there. As far as Parker goes too, you know, that whole situation is just so effed up. I just don't get it. I don't get it. I really don't. I don't understand it. You sit him for a month and now he's coming back and he's going to play and you're going to showcase him. I don't understand it. It's weird. It's a weird move, but if they can get something and they can squeeze value out of him and they can trade him for something, then they do that. But what are you going to get for him? A second round pick? If they could squeeze a second round pick out of Jabari Parker, I'm cool with that. And they don't have to take on extending money beyond just an expiring deal. Cool. Let's do that. Well, but if they have to take on long-term money, then that's when I'm like,
That's the sticking point, because what we've heard is that the Bulls front office is unwilling, not just hesitant, unwilling to take on more money, a non-expiring deal, in a Jabari Parker trade, because they want that flexibility. Hashtag future flexibility. They're obsessed with it. We know this, even though it seems like no one has a great deal of optimism that they can go out and land any big name free agents in the summer, whether you're talking about KD or even a second tier guy like Kemba Walker. Either way, deciding to throw Jabari back into the rotation to try and increase his trade value, I mean, I don't really know what they're planning to achieve, if that is still a truth and an unwavering truth, because it sounds like they're not having a whole lot of success in any Jabari talks that do not involve the Bulls taking on money. So if they are not willing to do so, that's a non-starter, and then putting Jabari back into the rotation to try to increase his trade value is kind of pointless, is it not? Because how much are you really going to increase his trade value by playing him in the next few weeks, coming off the bench? I mean, when you're talking about maybe we get a second rounder for him, to me, that's why it's kind of pointless. But it's still, in my mind, if I'm trying to read between the lines and figure out what the Bulls are doing here, it is the reason, along with the Bobby Portis thing, it is one of the two big reasons why they're about to, you know, sit Rolo, essentially remove him from the rotation, and make him an unhappy camper until hopefully the buyout there happens. It's like the Bulls are trying to do a few different things right now, and it all looks just kind of messy and incompetent, because we can sit here on the day after deadline day and talk about what happened to Rolo or Jabari, and heck, maybe both of them are still on the roster after trade deadline day. But we can then at that point evaluate and grade what the Bulls front office did or didn't do. Right now, it looks like they're kind of stuck in a messy situation.
Here's what I will say, because criticism, because we said criticism's given when it is due and credit is given when it is due. And we try to be fair as much as we can on both sides of the coin. the Bulls, since they started the rebuild, have been good at getting deals done and getting value out of guys during this rebuild, right? Justin Holiday, 2 second round picks. Nico Mirotic getting a first round pick for him. Going out and getting Noah Vonleh for basically nothing. Claiming David Nwaba off of waivers for basically nothing. Am I missing anything here over the last, I don't know, 18 months or so? Regardless, they've made good moves. Good moves, right? So maybe we need to have a little bit more faith that they can squeeze something out of Parker and Lopez over the next 2.5 weeks to try to get something out of these NBA teams until the deadline comes. Maybe we need to have a hairline of faith that they can squeeze something out of Parker, something out of Lopez. And hey, worst case scenario, Lopez and Parker are bought out after February 7th. And guess what? Hands are washed clean. They buy Lopez out, they buy Parker out, both are off the roster. You don't get anything for them, but guess what? The money's off the books, and guess what? We get to play the young guys for all the minutes, and we don't have the money on the books come 2019 summer. So,
yeah,
that's worst case scenario, right?
Like, I guess it doesn't hurt or hinder the Bulls' development of their young core too much if Jabari is essentially just getting bench minutes and helping a second unit that is woefully undermanned as far as scoring power right now. And maybe he does actually increase his trade value a bit by looking like a solid bench piece who can come in and score the ball for you. But to me, like, that is the other risk that I've always been worried about when it comes to Jabari. And, like, I don't care. The sympathy for Jabari is minimal with me. The dude made $20 million this season, came in out of shape, said all sorts of things that did not ingratiate him well to the fan base. Like, whatever. Sympathy is at a minimum for me with Jabari right now. So I'm not on that whole Bulls fans being like, oh, I feel so bad for Jabari. No, I don't. Don't care. You can call me insensitive. I don't care. I don't feel bad for Jabari. What I care about is his inclusion in Boylan's rotation, or his inclusion in some lineups that include the likes of Dunn, LaVine, Markkanen, Wendell, and heck, maybe even Bobby, throw him in there, disrupting the developmental chemistry of those people who will actually be here beyond this season, because clearly Jabari won't be. And that is always the biggest concern I've had. So, I mean, when it comes to trying to raise his trade value, don't sacrifice developing the right guys for maybe trying to get 2 second rounders instead of one for Jabari Parker, which, by the way, still unlikely because the Bulls are unwilling to take on money for Jabari, and it sounds like no team wants to do that.
Right. I agree with you. I agree with you. I think that's the best case scenario here is you can squeeze a second rounder out of Jabari and maybe squeeze a second rounder out of Robin Lopez, and in return you just get matching salaries that are expiring at the end of the year. So that would be best case scenario for me. By the way, Memphis is looking like a dumpster fire, so that has been good for the Bulls' second round pick that they're going to get in 2019. So that's something to be excited about.
Woo-hoo.
So if Memphis continues to slide and slide and slide, that second round pick will continue to be higher and higher, and it won't be a pick outside of the range of not on our draft board. So that's good news. That's good news for Bulls fan. Matt, the last thing I got for you, just real quick. For all of our Bulls fans out there, that if you're not subscribed to The Athletic, you should be doing that, because Stephen Noe and Darnell Mayberry do a wonderful job of covering the Bulls. Most Bulls fans who listen to this show right now are probably subscribed and followed Stephen Noe and Darnell Mayberry, both on Twitter. We've had they're friends of the show. They come on the show all the time. So I got this nugget from Darnell's, funny enough, from his Nuggets from his notebook, one of his columns. He does it after every single game. This is from the comments, and it's interesting because it talks about Lauri Markkanen, and it shouldn't come as a surprise, but this is a follow up to a commenter asking about if it seems like Lauri Markkanen is frustrated at all. And so this is what Darnell says. I recently asked him about having to take so many shots late in the shot clock, and he took the high road saying he can make shots. But when I followed up, reiterating my specific question, what impacts does that have on him, he clammed up and said he didn't have anything to say about that. And that told me all I needed to know. So yes, I sense some frustration, but he's on the leadership committee, you know, can't be airing out dirty laundry to the media. And then a little smiley face from Darnell. So the question was basically just, you know, is Lowry frustrated with the shots that he's getting and the stretches of going cold and maybe not even getting looks? And is he frustrated with having to take shots with 2-3 seconds left on the shot clock? And that was his answer. So I thought that was a good little tidbit there from Darnell.
Yeah, we've kind of seen Markkanen tiptoe around some tough questions from the media this season, which has been a tough season for him and his team, obviously. And clearly he's still trying to figure out the you know, quote unquote politically correct way to voice his opinion sometimes. Whereas some of his teammates were a little bit better at it. Like Zach LaVine even joked about it earlier this season when he was posed a pretty pointed question and a leading question about being the guy, the go-to guy, the clutch shot guy, etc., rather than his teammates. And LaVine handled it well. I think Markkanen is still just kind of learning how to deal with the media and how and when he can voice his opinions without worrying about stepping on other people's toes or hurting anybody's feelings, because we got a lot of those kind of responses from Markkanen when the coaching change was going on, and it seemed like he didn't really know how to handle that as far as the questions he was getting from the media and how to voice his opinion without hurting people's feelings. So I think that is still an element to a very young player who's still fairly new to this league, and hopefully Markkanen can come into his own and you know, find some level of fuck you attitude to express his opinions when he feels like he needs to express them. Because guess what? For all of the improvement of Zach LaVine's game and for all the people talking about, is Chris Dunn the point guard of the future? You know, is Wendell, is his ceiling really that high? Whatever, whatever. Markkanen is still a very important piece of this rebuild. Maybe the most important, and he's having a down year in his second season, and that sucks. And I'm sure he feels like it sucks. I want him to be able to voice the fact that he feels like it sucks. But we don't really hear that from him quite yet. And I think it's just his timidity and perhaps not necessarily immaturity, but just still developing as far as a guy willing to voice his opinions and not worry about the consequences of voicing those opinions.
I'll take that. I'll take that over a cookie cutter answer, to be honest with you. I don't want the cookie cutter answers. And I think a lot of people appreciate the emotion and being real as opposed to just being, yeah, okay, same response every single time. Like, I think people appreciate that more than anything else. And look, it might get him in a little bit of trouble with the guys in the locker room, but hey, that's part of growing. And I think you're right. He's going to learn. And look, I want to remind people before we get out of here too about Markkanen. That injury, and I think it's not stressed enough, that injury is a bigger deal than I think people are realizing. That injury affected him a ton. Like, that's part of his game. He had to come back and overcome the fact that it hurts when you're shooting that. Like, coming back and having to readjust your shot and learning how to take shots without adjusting for pain and compensating for the pain that you're going to have when you're taking your normal shooting stroke, or when you're going to the basket and you're going to get hacked on an and one, you know, not compensating for that. All of those things play a factor into this, and he's only 20 games in since he's came back at 100%, and I think he's still, like, mentally and physically still trying to come back from some of all of that. So patience, please. Like, sure, the offense is not running to what Markkanen should be playing to. You know, it's not running to his effectiveness, but at the same time, I still think the injury is affecting him a ton, so I think patience is all we need to know about Markkanen. And so a combination of both of those things is why I think we're seeing kind of a little bit of a dip in and a little bit of ghosting in Markkanen. So hopefully now that we're at that 20-game marker, that now if we can go from now to another 20 games, at that point we see an elevation in his game, and now he's back to what we saw at the middle stretch of the season last year.
Yeah, and I mean, just big picture, so we can maybe end on a little bit of an optimistic note here. We can talk about being impatiently waiting for Markkanen to come into his own and hopefully have some kind of bounce back to finish his sophomore season and become a more vocally confident and a more confident on the floor, give me the ball, let me win this game kind of player for this Bulls rebuild, and say, man, I wish Markkanen was a bit more aggressive as far as speaking his mind and demanding the ball. And it's fair that we can say those things about wanting to see that from Markkanen, and we can be impatiently waiting for that version of Markkanen to come to fruition. But what would you rather be dealing with? Impatiently waiting for that version of Markkanen to show up, or dealing with a, oh dear God, what did he say this time version of Jimmy Butler on an 8-seed Bulls team? Because to me, the option is clear.
I would have to tend to agree with you. I would have to tend to agree with you. Well, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel. Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us your text, your voicemails, everything you got for us. Lakers and Bulls tonight. So if you want to drop us a text or a voicemail after the game, pre-game, during the game, whenever it is, we're going to be doing mailbag tomorrow. So get those in before tomorrow's show. You'll hear yourself on tomorrow's show. Your question will be answered. Once again, 331-979-1369 is the line to drop us a text or a voicemail. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Enjoy Bulls and Lakers tonight. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.